So I think, without further ado, I shall ask Ellen to kick off, because I know that she wants to say some things in the traditional manner. She is going to orate, and then we'll have a bit of a Q&A, starting with me, and then maybe others can chip in as well at some stage.
Okay.
Ellen.
Okay. Iawn. Diolch yn fawr. Tempted to start by saying that I'm speaking on behalf of myself and David Ellis Thomas, but I...
And Rosemary Butler.
And Rosemary Butler, yeah. Felly, diolch i chi yn gyntaf am y gwahoddiad i gael dweud ychydig eiriau rhannu rhywfaint o sylwadau gyda chi ar y diwrnod pwysig yma. Fel rhywun sy'n dieddol o fod yn ddiymynedd am newid, mae'r dathliad 20 mlynedd yma wedi fy atgoffa faint sy'n wirioneddol wedi newid dros y cyfnod yma. Tybed y fydder Ellen Jones, 30 oed honno, oedd yn troedio strydoedd Ceredigion neu'n ffono ffermwyr amheus iawn yng Ngheredigion yn ymgyrchu o blaid pleidlais IE wedi meddwl y byddai yn cynulliad ni erbyn 2017 wedi esblygu mor barhaus yn ystod ei ddau ddegawd cyntaf. Mae'r sefydliad fel y mae heddiw yn wahanol iawn i'r un y gwnaethon ni ymgyrchu drosto yn 1997 fel ei hamlinellwyd yn y ddeddfwriaeth wreiddiol hynny. I'm looking around to just check that somebody is making sure that I'm not buzzing. Am I buzzing as I'm going along? No, I'm fine, am I? Right, okay, iawn. I'm buzzing here in my own ears, but there's probably nothing wrong with that. And my speech goes on to say, diolch i'm rhagflaenwyr, David Ellis Thomas a Rosemary Butler.
Arais ar ddarchor.
Diolch i'r ddau ohonyn nhw. A'n hyd aelodau ac yn bennaf i bobl Cymru wrth gwrs, mae gen i'n bellach senedd a phwerau deddfu sylfaenol, phwerau amrywio trethu, phwerau newydd dros ein hetholiadau yn hunain ac rydym dod yn ganolbwynt ar gyfer dadleuon democrataidd cenedlaethol yng Nghymru. Ond rhaid i ni beidio a thwyllo ein hunain na bod yn hunan fodlon gan fod digon o waith i wneud o hyd o ran sicrhau bod ein sefydliad ar sail gyfartal a syneddau eraill y Deyrnas Unedig ac o ran cynnyddu ymwybyddiaeth fod pob rhan o'n gwlad a yn ymwybodol o'n presenoldeb ni ac o'n gwaith ni. Fodd bynnag, rydym yn sicr yn symud i'r cyfeiriad cywir. Yn ôl pob tebyg, rhoddion China fydd cyple yn rhoi i'w gilydd ar achlysur 20 mlynedd o briodas, a mae hynny'n addas iawn o ran creu cyfatebiaeth i ddisgrifio priodas ein sefydliad ni a phobl Cymru. China, mae'n rhywbeth hardd sydd weithiau'n gain ac yn fregus, ond yn aml yn ennill balchder cynnil, a gaiff ei arddangos mewn cabinet ag arddresel ledled y wlad. A ffrin iawn yw'r bobl sydd eisiau gweld y China yn deilchion rhacs ar y llawr erbyn hyn. Ble mae'r dystiolaeth am hynny felly? Wel, gadewch i ni feddwl y meiliad yn 1997, dim ond 50.3% o bobl Cymru y pleidleisiodd dros y Cynulliad Cenedlaethol, ond erbyn 2017, yn ôl yr olwg barn y BBC Cymru, roedd 73% o bobl o'r farn y dylid naillai cynnyddu pwerau'r cynulliad neu eu bod nhw'n ddigonol. Roedd nifer y pleidleiswyr yn yr etholiad diwethaf ar ei lefel uchaf ers yr etholiad cyntaf yn 1999, gan wrth droi gostyngiad. Ac oes, mae'n rhaid i ni barhau arloesi er mwyn cyrraedd pobl. Mae'r dasg o rannu gwybodaeth ledled y wlad am y penderfyniadau a wneir yn y Cynulliad Cenedlaethol yn anodd tu hwnt fel yr ymlygwyd yn yr adroddiad diweddar a gyhoeddwyd gan y tasglu digidol dan gadaryddiaeth Leighton Andrews.
Right.
Felly, yn unol a'r gymhellion, mae'n rhaid i ni ystyried o'r newydd sut i gyflwyno'r wybodaeth honno, y straeon sy'n cael eu hadrodd gennym a'r iaith y gaiff ei ddefnyddio gennym a ble a sut y caff y wybodaeth honno i rannu. Mae'n destun balchder i fi fod ymhell dros 1.4 miliwn o bobl wedi ymweld â'r Senedd ers iddi agor yn 2006. A bod ein gwasanaeth addysg wedi ymgysylltu â chanoedd o filoedd o blant a phobl ifanc dros y cyfnod hwnnw. Rwy fi am weld bod pob person ifanc yn cael y cyfle yng Nghymru i allu dweud iddyn nhw fod yn ystod i cyfnod yn yr ysgol yn adeilad yn senedd ni yma i Caerdydd. Bydd y cynhedlaeth ddatganoli yma'n holl bwysig wrth helpu i osod ein sefydliad yn gadarn o fewn ymwybod y genedl ac wrth liwio'r ddyfodol. Rwyf hefyd yn gobeithio bydd ein cynigion i sefydlu senedd ieuenctid i Gymru yn cyfrannu'n sylweddol yn hyn o beth. A dyna pam fy mod wedi wrth y modd fod dros 5,000 o bobl ifanc wedi ymateb i'n ymgynghoriad diweddar ar sefydlu Senedd Ieuenctid. Mae fues i'n rhan bore yma o drafodaeth yn y Senedd gyda dros 100 o fyfyrwyr ysgol, ac yn, fe ges i'n alan bach yn nerfus oherwydd nath Catrin Jones, oedd yn lliwio'r sesiwn, ofyn am bleidlais ar sut y bydder bobl ifanc yn ni wedi pleidleisio 20 mlynedd nôl mewn referendum. O'n i bach yn nerfus o'r canlyniad, ond allai weithoch chi oedd mwyafrif llethol y bobl ifanc yn ni yn credu y bydden nhw wedi pleidleisio o blaid sefydlu'r cynulliad. Felly oedd hwnna'n galonogol iawn i gael hynny, ac oedd yn, allan ni ddim wedi stage manager fe yn well sy'n ni wedi ceisio gwneud hynny. Ac yn, wrth gwrs yn deillio'n rhannol o hyn oll o'r angen i ymgysylltu gyda phobl Cymru, rwyf wedi gweithio gyda'r aelodau cynulliad dros y cyfnod diweddar yma i geisio cynnyddu perthnasedd a natur gyfoes dadleuon o thrafodaethau yn siambr. Rwy'n credu fod hi'n holl bwysig fod aelodau a Llywodraeth Cymru yn cael ei gweld yn ymateb mewn ffordd amserol i ddatblygiadau o fewn cyd-destun ehangach ac y gallant ehangu ffocws i'r trafodaethau yn unol â hynny lle bo angen. Er enghraifft, daeth gweithdrefnau newydd ar gyfer cwestiynau bris a chwestiynau amserol i rym fis Ebrill er mwyn ymdrin â materion o bwysigrwydd cenedlaethol dybryd ac er mwyn gwella'r trefniadau ar gyfer craffu ar y Llywodraeth, ac mae'r aelodau eisoes yn cymryd mantis i'r eitha o'r cyfleoedd newydd yma. Mae yna ddatganiadau 90 eiliad wedi i cyflwyno ers mis Tachwedd y Llynedd, a mae hynna'n rhoi cyfle i aelodau unigol i wneud datganiadau am yr hyn sy'n bwysig i'w hetholaethau ac am faterion personol o bwys iddyn nhw hefyd, ac mae hynna yn amrywio yn trafodaeth ar hyn sy'n digwydd ar lawr y siambr. Ac o fus Mawrth eleni ymlaen hefyd, mae'r pwyllgor deisebau yn ystyried yn automatic pu'n y ddylid argymell deisebau cyhoeddus a mwy na 5,000 o lofnodwyr i'w trafod mewn cyfarfod llawn o'r cynulliad. Ac ym mis Gorffennaf eleni, fe drafodwyd y ddeiseb gyntaf o dan y weithdrefn yma ar ddiogelu lleoliadau cerddoriaeth fyw yn y siambr, ac o gynlyniad i hynny cytunodd Llywodraeth Cymru i newid ei pholisi chynllunio. Mae un o'r mesurau eraill a roddwyd mewn lle yn hymor y cynulliad yma wrth gwrs oedd cynnwys ethol cadyryddion pwyllgorau, mater o ddiddordeb mawr i rai presennol fan hyn, ac mae hynny wedi caniatau i roi annibyniaeth i'n cadyryddion ni a mwy o fandad iddyn nhw fel cadyryddion o'i pwyllgorau o ran craffu ar Lywodraeth Cymru. A rai misoedd yn ôl hefyd i ni wedi cytuno hefyd ar broses 2 gam newydd ar gyfer y gyllideb er mwyn gallu craffu ar y pwerau trethu a benthygad datganoledig o fewn y cylch ar gyfer craffu ar y gyllideb mewn amser priodol. Ar ei pen ei hunain, wrth gwrs, dim ond camau bach yw rhain, a bosib iawn, gawn nhw ddim lawer fwy o sylw, lawer fawr o sylw yn ei hunain, fyddan nhw ddim yn destun trydariad gan Martin Shipton na Fon Roderick o bosib, ond gyda'i gilydd fel pecyn, mae'r diwygiadau hyn oll yn gweithio tuag at yr un nod, sef sicrhau fod yn cynulliad cenedlaethol yn gryfach, yn gadarnach, a gwella'r trefniadau ar gyfer craffu ar Lywodraeth Cymru. So, what about the future? Well, already the volume of legislative scrutiny being undertaken by the Assembly has increased significantly in recent years, with more bills of greater size and complexity, and more subordinate legislation. Brexit, however, will provide, in my view, the greatest challenge to our National Assembly in its 20-year history. I've no doubt that issues such as where current European legislative powers will lie in future, how those changes are agreed, and the impact they will have on Wales's annual budget will dominate proceedings, let alone the social, economic, and financial consequences of the UK-EU negotiations. We will also, at the same time, need to seek the best arrangements possible for effective working between the parliaments of our nations, whilst continuing to deploy an international strategy in order to build and maintain our relations with countries in the EU and across other continents. I am also ambitious for our Assembly, and I want it to be in the best possible position to represent Wales and its people and to hold government to account. That's why I've established the expert panel to consider our arrangements, the size of the assembly and how it is elected, including the electoral system and the minimum voting age. In January 2015, the previous Assembly Commission under Rosemary Butler's stewardship concluded that with only 60 members, the National Assembly is underpowered and overstretched. The 2017 Wales Act has given us the ability for the first time to address this to ensure we are well equipped to embrace the challenges and opportunities of a dynamic, changing political and constitutional environment. These matters which relate to the state of Welsh democracy are now our responsibility in the Assembly, and it is up to us whether or not we take them forward, whether or not we change our name from Assembly to Parliament, whether or not we reduce voting age to 16, whether or not we increase the number of AMs. We now decide to do this, or we decide not to. I'm also acutely aware, however, that we are operating within a constrained public purse. Being a Cardi, I am pleased to know that the Assembly Commission's net cash budget allocation in percentage terms in comparison with Welsh Government funding is at its lowest level this year than since before 2012. There's been some debate about Commission expenditure over recent months, and I can assure you here today, all present, that in embracing some of the challenges and opportunities ahead that I've outlined, that we will seek to do that in the most cost-effective of solutions. It's our 20th birthday today. You may have noticed that there haven't been fireworks or balloons or a cake. There are none in the efforts to be cost effective. There have been no balloons or fireworks, just business as usual. And maintaining and building the integrity and authority of our Parliament is so important, whether that's in building relations, reforming our internal arrangements, strengthening our scrutiny procedures, or in our constitutional discussions with the UK government. But the abstract circle sculpture, the heart of Wales that is in the centre of our chamber in the Senedd, is designed to represent a confluence of listening and decision-making, a dynamic of emergence as it rises out of the floor. And we must always be conscious of the expectation that fundamentally we exist to improve the lives of the people we serve. And in order to change and grow, we must continue to earn and win their trust. Diolch yn fawr.
Thank you very much indeed, Elin. I'm going to turn to David now.
Who'll disagree with absolutely everything I've just said.
What I'm going to ask him, actually, and he can, of course, touch on what you've said, Elin, but I'm going to specifically ask him about the fact that there are clearly those who take the view that the role of the presiding officer should be that of a neutral umpire rather than a player. And I can tell you that Alan Michael, with whom you crossed swords in February 2000, is still very resentful of what happened in those days. I know that because I was talking to him last week and he actually raised it with me, and I was talking to him about something completely different. So in terms of this idea of a presiding officer being, as it were, an agent for change, as opposed to simply someone who chairs meetings. How do you see it, David, and what did you try to achieve during your periods?
Well, thank you for mentioning my long-lost colleague, the Police Commissioner for South Wales. I remember the job interview I had from Alan Michael when he was Secretary of State. I had not expected to be interviewed for the job of presiding officer because I had assumed this was an assembly election. However, since I had been first approached by the previous permanent secretary whether I would accept this position if nominated and had said yes, I thought it would have been churlish of me not to turn up for my job interview. Just for you to have the atmosphere, it was in CP1, in the Secretary of State's office, and I think I was asked three questions. First of all, I was asked, haven't you throughout your life been a stern opponent of the Labour Party. That was when I was still a member of Plaid Cymru. And have you not voted against Labour in all possible opportunities? To which I answered, why don't you speak to your chief whip in the House of Lords? You will find that I have voted Labour as a peer more often, or from the crossbenches, than many, if not most, of Labour peers. First question. Second question, and this is relevant to your earlier question, but will you not use your position as presiding officer to extend the Constitution of Wales? And I said, no, because the role of a presiding officer is not to extend the Constitution, except where there is a consensus in the National Assembly. And anyway, anything the presiding officer does has to be on advice. Now, one of my first and most important successes in developing the Constitution was sorting out the then Chief Legal Officer of Welsh Government, one Winston Roddick, who had sent my designated lawyer, counsel to the presiding officer, one David Lambert, into exile in Cardiff University. I noticed that there are other distinguished people who got into exile in Cardiff University. And but I remember going on the day before the vote of no confidence motion in Alan Michael as first secretary, as the title then was, to take advice from the said David Lambert as to how I should process and proceed with this vote. So everything I did then was within the Constitution as I understood it, on advice from an independent expert, but it was contrary, of course, to the conspiracy put together by the then Permanent Secretary, one John Shortridge, together with the said Winston Roddick, who deposited a piece of correspondence on my front desk while I was presiding. And in these extreme circumstances, what does one do? One calls to mind the great crisis of one's previous life. And there I was back chairing the annual general meeting of the Students' Union at Bangor University. And there was a motion on the table to be proceeded with. And the anarchists were standing up on points of order and trying to prevent the progress of the meeting. So I stood up, thank you, there they are again. So I stood up and I said, there is a motion on the table and it will be taken. That's what went on in my head. And I looked to the chief whip of my then party, obviously Edwin Jones, and I said, I asked whether the motion was still, did Cynnig Dal go on? And it was, so the motion was put. And the Assembly agreed the motion. And then the Labour group met and elected their preferred leader. That's what I did. It was democratically right, and it was good for Wales, and I don't apologise for it.
Thanks very much, David.
There was no interview, by the way, but from Carwyn Jones to me.
Excellent. Okay, very good to
things have changed, and the separation of powers that's happened since then has made that possible. There was only politics involved in my election.
I'm going to bring us right up to date. Do you see, and I'll start with Ellen, do you see Brexit prompting a constitutional crisis?
Well, whether it's a crisis or not, I'm sure different people will use different words for that, so I'll be careful in my choice of words. I think it's a constitutional challenge. And obviously the withdrawal bill, as it is currently drafted, is not something that is supported by a majority. Even without a vote, I can tell that it's not going to have a majority within the National Assembly, because it fundamentally goes against the results of two other referenda that have laid within, by the people of Wales, the democratic mandate for
the Assembly to have legislative powers in the areas that are devolved to it, and we know those areas. They've been defined by the Wales Act of 2017. They include agriculture, they include environment, and no, it should not be the case then that a clause in a Westminster bill, the EU withdrawal bill, should deny us those powers in any shape or form. So it is a constitutional challenge, and I'd even go as far as to agree with you, it's a crisis.
But how do you see things panning out from here?
Well, matters of negotiation between Welsh Government and UK Government, but I also want it to be a matter for Parliaments as well to assert their views, because they are fundamentally parliamentary. It's a fundamentally parliamentary challenge to us as a parliament, to the Scottish Parliament as well. I'm keen to progress that discussion. I'm going to Scotland next week to meet my counterpart, the presiding officer there. There will be a vote, and there'll be a series of statements that will lead up to the vote on the LCM, that the legislative consent motion that we have in this assembly. If UK politicians are true to their word, they will listen to the result of that vote, and it will be then for the UK Parliament and the UK Government to change that that bill as it stands. I suspect that. That Wales Government, Parliament, committees may well come up with amendments to that bill. We certainly used the fact for the first time, I think it's the first time the presiding office presented actual amendments to the process of the Wales Bill as it went through the two houses of the UK Parliament. So we have established that as a means of influencing legislation. But you know, the strongest voice is the democratic voice of the people of Wales in a vote in the National Assembly.
So, David, about a minute ago, I noticed you shaking your head. I doubt that was in bewilderment. What's your take on this?
This is the worst United Kingdom government in Parliament assembly that I've ever seen in my whole political life. And I've had enough of them, quite frankly. And I trust them none at all. The Secretary of State for Wales was rabbiting on this morning about the failure of Welsh Government to devolve things to the regions. What about the failure of the UK Government to take account of the will of the people of Wales in Referendum United in 2011? Let's talk the talk, and let's stand firm on this matter, a cross-party in the National Assembly. And that is something I've always tried to do, and I'm able to do it even more effectively now as an independent, is to talk across all parties and ensure that we will take a clear stand. And the House of Lords will vote this bill down as it stands, I promise you. There we are then. Thank you for those who applauded. As for those who didn't, I don't know where you want to live next.
Thank you very much, David.
He knows the Commissioner of Police for South Wales, South Wales, as he's already said.
He does. I don't know how much influence he has within that. I know that there is concern within the Assembly Commission, which obviously extends to Ellen here and to others as well, about the way in which many people in Wales are not engaged with Welsh politics. And I know that I think you've now commissioned a piece of research about that, haven't you? Where do you see this going? I mean, you know, it might be said by some people that the Assembly would perhaps have greater engagement if it was possible to point to more tangible benefits that had accrued to the population of Wales than has been the case. And that, you know, rather than hand-wringing about why people don't understand much about what the Assembly does, that political parties ought to do more to improve the lives of the people of Wales.
Well, I agree, yes, the political parties have an obvious role to motivate and include people of Wales in how they design their own political work, how they develop their own policies, how they do their own canvassing and campaigning in all parts of Wales. People of Wales have elected five consecutive Labour governments, slight coalitions along the way. People of Wales have decided to do that and to back one political party in the main. So that hasn't created the kind of change excitement that you get in the context of UK elections, where there's a kind of excitement as to whether the Tories or Labour would win and which individual personality that would be. So we haven't had that dynamic in Wales, and it's the people who've decided on that. Now, whether the people have enough information, get enough information as to what we do, how we do things, what's being discussed on the floor of the Assembly this week, that's partly, you know, I'm going over old ground here, I'm sure, but it's partly to do with the numbers of people that now read the Western Mail or watch Wales Today, where they get their media sources and information from. But it's partly to do, and I agree that, definitely agree that we shouldn't be hand-wringing about, oh, it's everybody else's fault and we're really interesting and everybody should be watching us. You know, that's now not how I see this at all. This is about us being able to work out the ways where we can interest the people of Wales, how we can communicate what we do and do that on an ongoing basis. Now, yes, the Commission set up an independent task group to look at how the priorities of that work should be done, what the recommendations were. Leighton Andrews, referred to several times from this podium already, chaired that. I was keen for it to be led by people who are far more expert than Commission staff or Commission politicians. To do that, and we've got a long list of recommendations that I hope will feed into how we prioritise some of this work. I'll tell you why I started this piece of work was that on the day that we had one of the more exciting days of the National Assembly, and that was around a personality vote between who would be the First Minister, whether Carwyn Jones or Leanne Wood. And if you remember, there was an election in May of 2016 for that within the National Assembly, and there was a lot of interest all of a sudden, oh, there's an election on the floor of the Assembly for the First Minister. At that point, Senedd TV, our kind of internet broadcasting, crashed. So at the point of greatest interest, our technology let us down. So part of that is about making sure we have the right infrastructure, but we need more importantly than that to get people interested, and how do we do that? So yes, big things.
Dara?
I'm not surprised Senedd TV crashed on such an anti-democratic day.
Well, a vote is not democratic, is it? Not. You can't say that the Assembly holding that vote was anti-democratic. But you can say many things about it, and I'm sure you will now. But
I won't go into that, because it's the reason why I sit here as a happy independent, is because the vote for the First Minister was something which was developed in the Constitution of the Assembly as the opportunity to give the people, the Assembly members, gathered together, a way of reflecting the decision of the people of Wales at the previous election, and cobbling together a vote between the Welsh Conservatives and UKIP and Plaid seemed to me to be, as I say, an anti-democratic travesty of how he reflected the election result that the people of Wales had given us. Now, I'm a simple democrat, so I don't understand these things.
How would you improve engagement with the public, David?
Thank you for getting me away from that. Well, it's an issue not just for the National Assembly, it's an issue full of authorities, it's an issue for community councils, it's an issue for Parliament at Westminster, it's an issue for the European Parliament, it's an issue for all levels of democracy. And there are no shortcuts. The only way you improve engagement is by developing the political culture. And of course, party politics says he, not having a party and not having anybody to disagree with him at any constituency meetings anymore. It seems to me that the party politics, generally, with the exception of the rise of St. Corbyn, is basically going the same way as religious, certainly Christian, religious organisations have gone, which is, except perhaps perhaps the Roman Catholic Church in Wales is doing a bit better than the others, but they're all generally going down because people are not involved in the activity and don't see its usefulness. And so unless we can convince people that it's worth participating and joining, then we have to ask a serious question, what political parties as traditionally constituted are for? Because they are no longer able to interest the populace generally in democratic participation. And I think that's a big issue that I'm sure there are people here, well, there are certainly people here this afternoon who give us academic advice on that.
Well, there's a specific piece of research which has been commissioned, isn't there, in relating to, if you like, the demographic constitution of the Assembly in terms of who belongs to the Assembly. And there's some concern about the fact that it is not, as it stands, representative of the people of Wales as a whole. But I suppose the problem with that is, to a degree, and let's confront this, let's not avoid it, the fact of the matter is, as Rodri Morgan describes it in his autobiography, Wales is essentially a blue-collar nation as opposed to a white-collar nation. If we have a blue-collar nation with a predominant population being blue-collar, if we were to have a proportionate demographic membership of the Assembly, we would have a blue-collar Assembly. Is that something that would improve matters, Ellen?
Well, instinctively I'm a supporter of greater proportionality into the electoral system that we have in Wales, and that would not of itself but improve the kind of breadth of membership that we have, and I agree that it needs to be a wider, diverse base than it certainly is. The way that we've challenged some of those issues in the past, though, have been through the political parties and pressure on the political parties, and in particular on Plaid Cymru, and in particular the Labour Party, who have delivered the gender balance for the National Assembly. I am a member of a political party, so I will speak up slightly for political parties this afternoon and say that they are the means to ensuring that we have that wider diversity within them. But they need to be challenged by the public, by people like David and others, to improve their act in terms of ensuring a broader slate of candidates put forward in elections. That's easier to do in a proportional representation system, I suspect, than in a first-past-the-post system, where essentially political parties are democratic, believe it or not, and on the whole they still allow local constituency parties to elect their representatives, as they did in Dwyfor Meirionnydd in 2015, David.
I don't think you should open that can of worms.
I think you're the one. You've opened it already.
No, I won't go there.
Do you think we need more blue-collar and less white-collar AMs, David?
Well, we need to have every candidate selected by open primaries in all constituencies. We need to get out of this manipulation by political parties and the executives of political parties forcing constituencies to reselect their candidate when that person has already been selected 2 years previously. I didn't mention that, it was just in passing. But now we need to look at the whole question of how politicians emerge onto the stage for election. I do not think political parties are, let me say it like this, political parties are as useful to politics as organized denominations are to Christianity. I don't know enough about Islam to decide to speak for them, but I can tell you that organized religion, having been part of a number of different organizations, don't do much for the spirituality of people generally. And I would say the same thing applies to the role of political parties in relation to democratic participation. It's as serious as that.
The alternative, where do we go? I'm interested in knowing what the alternative to a political party.
Well, it's not an alternative to a political party. If you had open primaries where everyone within a constituency was able to vote in primaries for candidates, you would have a different situation.
Voting for candidates from the political parties?
Well, or any candidate that could put herself or himself up, as someone who is seriously contemplating standing as an independent in the next Assembly elections, I'm all in favour of this.
But you would have a situation where a political party would open itself up to all comers. I mean, the Conservatives have done a bit of that, haven't they, in Wales? Has it actually improved the level of representation from the Conservative Party?
Well, the Conservatives are 35% of the poll in Wales, which is the first for 20 years, I think. Is it 20 years? No.
But is that anything to do with the quality of their candidates, or is it simply national or UK national politics taking over? And that's another question for you, actually. I mean, are you concerned about the fact that, as evidenced by the results of the general election this year, it is becoming, are we reverting to a two-party system, and is that good? And what implications could it have for the Assembly?
Where is this two-party system in Wales?
No, what I'm saying is that in the general election, there was a very high proportion of people who voted for the two main parties at the expense of the other parties. And, I mean, if that were to be replicated in an Assembly election, you would have a lot of wasted votes on the regional list for a start, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but I'm talking about the serious restructuring of the electoral system as well as part of that, because you have to have full STV. I never said this when I was presiding officer, but I don't think regional members represent anyone, quite frankly. Because how could you possibly represent... Well, Leonard Morgan isn't here, so we can't have an argument about this. But we can't... How could you represent Mid and West Wales as a region? I mean, I have difficulty representing, to be very honest, I've got at least a number of constituents here. I must be careful what I say now. I might lose valuable votes if I stand again. The idea of representing the whole region, I mean, representing a rural constituency is doing it properly is a proper job. But I don't think anybody can represent these regions. But these were all devised because this was all that could be managed at the time. It's not proportional representation, it's additional member. So additional member was seen as a compromise. Now, had everything worked out according to the imagination of Ron Davis as he was when he was Secretary of State and devising the development, his vision was that he would become First Minister, that there would be there would be an election for the Assembly, and that there would be, within the first Assembly, there would have been fresh legislation to take the body further. The development of the Constitution would have begun from there. There wouldn't have had to be all these arguments between us and Westminster, and these arguments have happened under Labour as well as Conservative governments. The difficulties, I won't go through them this afternoon, but the difficulties I had with secretaries of state of different parties, and indeed committees in Westminster, which brought together David Jones and Alan Michael, I'm reminded, in defence of the wonderful ELCO system. Remember all that? Permission from Westminster to make primary legislation in Wales. I mean, let's not forget where we were and where we've come from and what shit we've had to put up with.
So, Ellen, thank you, David. Ellen.
Well, look, I decided today that I would speak frankly. There's a 20th birthday. Well, let's say we haven't quite grown up yet. And where we've come from is terrible.
I think it was a good thing to prompt you with Ellen Michael, wasn't it, to start with? So, Ellen, because there is not a government with an overall majority at Westminster, it's looking increasingly less likely that the Boundary Commission will proceed and that there will be a vote on the recommended boundaries, which will reduce the number of MPs in Wales from 40 to 29. What knock-on effect will that have in terms of the Assembly election? Because if we are remaining at 40, and if we do want to change our electoral system, what do we do?
Well, as I said in my speech, the Wales Act 2017 gives the Assembly now the powers for the first time to decide on what our electoral system should be, how many members we should have, what we call ourselves, whether the electoral franchise, should it include people at the age of 16 and 17. So we have all of those powers now for the first time. Now we don't just talk about whether we need more members or not and whether we're stretched or have to work too hard, all of that. Now we decide whether we believe that we should have more members to do the work even more effectively. Now, and so the expert panel that I've established, the Assembly has established, and Laura McAllister here chairs that expert panel, will come up with recommendations as to how an Assembly of an increased number could be voted for. The timetable is in place. There's enough time, enough periods as well without elections looming to enable that legislation to happen by the 2021 election. It'll be for the political parties and the independent AMs and the wider public in lobbying for or against to decide on whether that's the right thing for this Assembly to do. The fact that Westminster are deciding to not change the number of MPs or not change the boundaries of constituency boundaries in Wales here is, yes, relevant, but is not the driving force of change as I saw it or would see it now. Our decision in Wales as to whether we increase the number of members should be about whether it's the right thing to do, whether we have greater challenges that face us that require a greater number of members and a political system that enables the greater diversity you talked about already. And to do that, we decide on whether we do it or not. And remember, in the context of all of this, as I said, you know, Brexit will mean that the future assemblies, if Brexit happens, future assemblies will have more work to do. There will have to be decisions on what agriculture policy will look like, what environmental policy will look like. There will have to be probably even more tension around what the budget priorities should be. For the first time, the assemblies will have to decide between spending on direct payments to farmers and spending on greater spending on the NHS. Those political tensions around those kinds of budget decisions have not existed previously, because a lot of this funding for environmental projects, for economic reform projects and agricultural subsidies has existed and been ring-fenced elsewhere. So that those are big challenges for future assemblies, and we need to make sure it's our responsibility as current members to think about the next 20 years and what the assemblies of the future will be like and whether they'll be called parliaments or not. And we'll have a different view on that possibly from here, but we won't go into that one as well maybe today.
Thanks very much, Ellen. And thank you, David. I think time's up.